So tonight I want to continue with this series of talks I'm giving on the Brahma Viharas, the wholesome mind states that the Buddha continually encouraged us to cultivate. And tonight I want to talk about Karuna, which generally gets translated as compassion. And I want to start with a dictionary definition. Sometimes dictionary is amazing. Sometimes it has great definitions of things. This one in particular I really like. So the definition of compassion is a feeling of deep sympathy and sorrow for another who is stricken by misfortune, accompanied by a strong desire to alleviate the suffering. So compassion arises when a mind heart mind full of loving kindness encounters suffering. It's like that's the precursor. The heart has to be full of loving kindness. Then when it encounters suffering, compassion, this wholesome mind state of compassion just arises almost by itself. It's a wholesome mind state. And basically all what you're trying to do or what you're doing when you experience compassion is you're putting yourself in the other person's shoes. I think that's a good English expression, you know, imagining what it would be like to be in their situation and really connecting with it, feeling it. And the interesting thing about this definition is this is accompanied by a strong desire to alleviate the suffering. So compassion isn't just sitting back feeling, it also implies action, actually doing something. Without action, the first part of that definition is describes empathy, like we're feeling what the other person is feeling. That's an empathic thing. But it's that desire to do something, that spur to action that turns it into compassion. And I want to for a while here, I want to turn to two experts on compassion, the Dalai Lama and Sharon Salzberg, and share some things they've said about this that I think are quite wise. And then I'll come back and talk some more about this. But I want to. And this is the Dalai Lama from this book, The Book of Joy, that I've shared with some of you before, I'm sure. One of the differences between empathy and compassion is that while empathy is simply experiencing another's emotion, compassion is a more empowered state where we want to do what is best for the other person. As the Dalai Lama has described it, if we see a person who is being crushed by a rock, the goal is not to get under the rock and feel what they are feeling. It's to help remove the rock. It's a different energy than just empathy. It's like we don't want to just feel the pain, we want to relieve the pain. We want to do something. I love this image of, you know, someone's getting crushed by a rock. We don't want to get under the rock and feel it with them. Oh yeah, this feels terrible. No, we say, let's actually do what we can to move the rock. It's a great image, I think. And then in another place in this book, where here's the Dalai Lama again. Well, everyone agrees that being compassionate is a worthy goal. It is hard for many people to understand or to put into practice. The word compassion, as we have said, literally means suffering with. So if someone is suffering and we're being compassionate, we feel their suffering and we suffer along with them. We accept that as part of the process. The word, so what you would say to a person who says, I have enough problems of my own. Why should I worry about being more compassionate and think about others who are suffering? As we've discussed, the Dalai Lama began, we are social animals. Even for kings or queens or spiritual leaders, their survival depends on the rest of the community. So therefore, if you want a happy life and fewer problems, We have to develop a serious concern for the well-being of others. So when someone is passing through a difficult period or difficult circumstances, then automatically will come a sense of concern for their well-being. And if there is a possibility to help, then you can help. If there's no possibility to help, you can pray or wish them well. So even that, even the thought of well-wishing, of metta for this is better than nothing. But it's more, so if we can help, we help. And I like what the Dalai Lama is getting to here. Basically what he's saying is, compassion is an acknowledgement of the oneness of all beings, that we're all capable of suffering, and all of us are going to suffer, and all of us do suffer from things that happen as we go through our life. And so compassion is a way of saying, in some sense, yeah, this is just the human condition, and I'm just part of that human flow of condition. And right now, things are going pretty good for me, but this person is not so great, so let's do something about helping this person. It's an acknowledgement that we're all interconnected, that there is no real separateness going on. It's just separateness is just some delusive energy we have that makes us believe that that's what's going on. So here's the interesting thing, the next interesting thing. Just like metta practice, compassion, we have to begin with ourselves. We have to have compassion for ourselves. And I want to read two things from my friend Sharon Salzberg's book here. Right. And this is quite striking. The first step in developing true compassion is being able to recognize, to open to, and to acknowledge that pain and sorrow exist. Everywhere, absolutely everywhere, in one way or another, beings are suffering. Some suffering is intense and terrible, some is quiet and small. Well, suffering is not all there is in life. It is a thread that needs to be recognized clearly if we are to develop true compassion. So this is saying that all human beings, without exception, all beings, let's not get past just human beings, all beings without exception, are subject to sickness, old age, and death, essentially. We're all going to suffer in some way or other in that process, as well as other things that happen just in our day-to-day life. Sharon goes on. If we look at our own experience, it comes as no big surprise that suffering exists. We have our ups and downs. We have our pain, our loss, our sorrow, times when we do not get what we want, or we do get what we want, but it goes away or proves to be not what we wanted after all. We all experience this pattern because we know this experience as real, not receiving external confirmation of our perception is actually far more painful than a frank acknowledgement would be. So this is like saying, okay, it's quite actually way better to acknowledge, yeah, this is life. Life has these moments of suffering in it, guaranteed. Yet we are brought up with the feeling that suffering is somehow wrong or to be avoided. We get the idea that suffering is unbearable and should not even be faced. So we create a society that accommodates our need to deny pain as best we can. We use material consumption and painkillers to avoid suffering. We take people who are different, people who are in trouble, people who are old, people who are dying, and put them away out of sight in institutions. These are forms of suffering we all share, but there's so much humiliation and bitterness about being sick or growing old or dying that we feel we have to hide our pain. It's the opposite of accepting it. It's like I see this all the time. You know, if you spend any, I spent time doing hospice work, and I spent a lot of time just hanging out in, well, doing hospice work, hanging out in, quote, homes for the elderly. We used to be called old age homes. Now they're called, sunset places or some nice gentle euphemism, but that's what they are. And they're like warehouses. Don't want to have these people around, so let's put them all in this other place. And it's sad to see, because that's what happens to these people. So that's one thing that Sharon says. And then she goes on. This is wonderful. A story from the great Hindu epic, the Mahabharata, illustrates this human drive to deny. Yuzvatara is asked, what is the most wondrous thing in the world? What is the most wondrous thing in the world? He replies, the most wondrous thing in the entire world is that all around us people can be dying, and we don't believe it can happen to us. This is so true. It's like, no, that happens to old people or other people or people who, are bad or abuse themselves or whatever, but not me. It's not going to happen to me. It's as though we live our lives with a big surprise waiting at the end. Many times when I have stood in line at the checkout counter of the supermarket, I've seen the tabloid headlines talking about Elvis Presley, who is still alive and has been sighted somewhere. Elvis spotted in Florida or California or even once on Mars. Why can't he have died? People do die. Why is that so impossible to accept? When we deny our experience, we're always moving away from something real to something fabricated. To live by in this web of legend will always harm us. The truth may be difficult to open to, but it will never hurt us. What a tremendous relief to have the actual truth openly spoken. There is suffering in the world. Everything is up front. There are no games, no pretense, no denial. The knowledge of the truth of suffering allows us to feel our unity with others. The goal of our spiritual practice is to be able to understand, be able to look without illusion at what is natural in this life and what is actually happening for others and for ourselves. The willingness to see what is true is the first step in developing compassion. A tall order, however. So here's the other interesting thing. I said, compassion arises when a heart full of loving kindness encounters suffering. Well, here's the truth, of course, is that we encounter suffering, but our hearts aren't full of loving kindness all the time. What happens then? If we're not conscious, if we're not mindful, oh, this is what's going on. Here's what often happens. Our usual reaction might be simply to turn away. Oh, don't look at that. To avoid the unpleasantness we experience when we encounter someone or some group of beings who's suffering. It's always going to be unpleasant. It's always going to be unpleasant. And if we go around trying to avoid unpleasantness, then that's the not very that's not compassion anymore. We don't want to experience the unpleasantness. We'd rather distract ourselves with something pleasant. This aversion takes on different forms too, including fear and denial. Like part of that avoidance is, we see it and we go, oh, at some level, maybe not consciously, we go, that could be me. That could happen to me. And that's fearful. That can be a great cause of fear. Or we deny that the suffering as actually exists. Oh, that's just all in their mind. Or some such avoidance, right? Or here's the real insidious one. It's all their fault. It's all their fault. They're suffering, but it's their fault. You know, we see this in different ways. We see this partly in, you know, that anything that happens for a reason, that spiritual platitude that's so harmful. And so people think, oh, I'm suffering in this way because of something I did and I deserve it. People don't deserve to suffer. Nonsense. But we get caught in that belief, you know, that it's somehow it's their fault. They're suffering because it's their fault. I see this in myself sometimes when I'm working in, like I work as the chaplain in the hospital one day a week, and I go and I talk to people who are morbidly obese, like really, really overweight. And I have to really be careful because my reaction is always the same. It's like, oh, how could they let themselves do this to them? How could they do this to themselves? How could they let themselves get this way? Blame, 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 blame. And I have to sort of, no, I just have to let go of that thought completely. It's like this stuff happens in people's lives. This is what's happening now. This is be with this person. But it's, for me, I just get stuck there. A lot of what you see when people are sick are people who have abused their bodies in some ways. They're grossly overweight. They've suffered through alcohol or drug addiction. The hospital is full of people who come from some place like that. And it's so easy to sort of go around wagging your finger and blaming all the time instead of just going, this is what they got now. Now let's deal with what's here right now. Let's open our hearts to what their situation right now. If we don't turn away, often what happens instead, I'm seeing this a lot in what's going on in the news in the last 3 weeks or so, is people get really angry. You know, it's like that righteous anger of those horrible people. Look, shouldn't they, you know, how could that happen? And what, you know, the rant starts and it just, and other people are ranting and they accelerate each other's rants. And basically all this does is inflame the situation, just makes it worse. You can't help. You can't take wholesome action. You can't fulfill that strong desire to alleviate the suffering if you yourself are caught in an unwholesome mind state. Anger can spur you to action. So anger has its use. I'm not saying anger is bad or anything like that. Anger, you know, that initial impetus to be angry because something really horrible has happened, that can spur you to action of some sort. But then you have to literally let that anger go. You can't have a heart full of loving kindness and be angry at the same time. These are two contradictory mind states. So somehow we have to learn to, you know, feel the anger, go, yeah, but let that anger be useful in the sense of spurring us to action. But that's all it is. It's just that's what it's. And then let the anger go, open our hearts, and actually have compassion for the situation as a whole. Which I'm not, of course, saying any of this is easy, because it's not. It's really difficult. You look at the world and you go, how, you know, just, I mean, it tears you, right? So in the traditional teachings on the Brahma Viharas, there's this thing called near enemies and far enemies. So near enemies are things that on the surface, their mind states, emotional states, mental formations that look like compassion, but they're not. The first of these is pity. And pity looks like compassion. Oh, those poor people. Except you've removed yourself from the situation. Now you're like, looking down at these poor people, oh, it's so sad. But you're not connected to them anymore. You're literally looking down at them. You've just lost your connection to the people completely. There's no heart connection anymore. It's mental. It's purely a pity. It's a mental situation of like, oh, you think it's so sad that these people are like that, so that they have to struggle in this way, but there's no heart there anymore. That heart connection is just gone. The other one, this is Karuna is interesting. Compassion is interesting. It has two different near enemies, unlike the other ones that usually only have one, right? Karuna, but compassion is quite complicated. So the other one is sorrow. In sorrow, you become overwhelmed. You've lacked the equanimity required to stay grounded. You've lost ground, and you're just like being swept up in the sadness of the emotional energy of compassion. I mean, with compassion, you are looking and experiencing very directly the unpleasant, difficult situation of the other. And it overwhelms you. This is where equanimity, which I'll talk about in a couple of weeks, is really important. Equanimity is the balancing force of all the Brahma Viharas, where it's like it keeps things so that we don't get overwhelmed, that we can keep our heart open, but not be crushed. Sorrow often arises when we think about the larger problems in the world, as opposed to the individual situations, the huge problems politically, environmentally, those sorts of things. That's where sorrow often arises, because it's like, how can I do anything? How can I, do something about my strong desire to alleviate the suffering? I'm just so caught up in the horror of it all. And this is something else we have to watch for, that we don't get just caught in that space of being overwhelmed, that we keep our balance, we keep grounded. Then, so those are the near enemies. Then the far enemy is the opposite of, would be a good way to put it. And the far enemy of compassion is cruelty. Instead of having compassion for the situation, you want to get in there and get your wax in too, whether it's mentally or actually physically, right? And this one can actually be quite subtle, because we often think, oh, well, I'm not like that. I'm never cruel. It's not me. It's not in me to be that way. I'm a good person, right? But then we think about some situation or some person or whatever that's suffering, and in the mind we go, and he deserves it. This is cruelty. This is not having a heart full of compassion towards that person, but instead thinking they should suffer, they deserve to suffer, maybe they should even suffer more. That would be good. That's where we get caught. That's where cruelty arises in the mind. And it may be just purely at the mental level. Like, I'm not saying we're going to go out and hit people with sticks or anything like that. But it's that mental arising of they deserve it. No one deserves to suffer. No one deserves to suffer. But we get caught thinking some people, those really bad people, do. And we have to watch for that, because that's our reactive mind getting caught in one of these places I've been talking about. So, with these near enemies and the far enemy, how do we work with this? How can we be skillful around situations where compassion is what we should be working with? And oh, what a surprise! The key to this is mindfulness. Here we are back at mindfulness again. The interrelationship between the Brahma Viharas, these noble abodes, these practices, and mindfulness is really obvious at this point. If we can see clearly what's arising at the level of heart mind, that we can see pity or sorrow or cruelty arising, then we're less likely to continue in that. Remember, the right effort is if I see an unwholesome mind state arising, I should do something about it. I have to acknowledge it, number one, very important. Yep, that's what I've got. This is what's going on right now. And then we have to do what we can to actually alleviate that suffering in ourselves, because all of those unwholesome mind states and all of the near enemy and near enemies and the far enemy are unwholesome mind states. All of them make us suffer. We're creating our own suffering, just like that. And mindfulness is the key to seeing this happening. And interestingly enough, mindfulness of body sensation. Well, here we are back to the basics of simple mindfulness. Mindfulness of the body often gives us a clue. With pity, we feel cut off, literally, like if we've chopped something off. We're disconnected. Sorrow always has about it this sense of real heaviness. When I was at one time, I did a long 6-week retreat. I was doing 10 days of each of the Brahma Viharas. So I was in the midst of about 8th day of compassion practice. This is like literally tuning into suffering all day long, every day, and working with it. And then I just got to the point where it's like I could hardly walk. I felt it was so heavy. I was overcome by sorrow. And when I saw that, oh, then it sort of it softened a bit. I could walk. Still wasn't pleasant, but it was like seeing that sorrow, which was what was literally weighing me down, let me take the edge off it at least. And cruelty is always hot and tight. That cruel energy is always, sort of gripped by it. Those people deserve it. They're really bad. Has that sort of vibe to it, no matter what you do. So mindfulness is really useful when we start to veer away from that heart mind full of compassion for the suffering situation into one of the near enemies and far enemy. Mindfulness is the clue that we're slipping over the edges, and we need to pull back and tune in. And often, sometimes that means we have to sort of step right back, tune into loving kindness, tune into metta, sort of open our hearts again wide, and then go back into the situation. Sometimes that might be the most skillful thing to do, is to go, no, right now, I'm not connected to this situation in any way that's useful or helpful. If I stay here in the midst of this situation, I'm just going to cause more suffering. I should step back. And sometimes that's the skillful thing to do. But at the same time, we're keeping being drawn to dealing with the situation and doing something about it. Something I found out today reminds me of this. There's a woman who I know, who comes to the morning sits. And she had a friend who was a doctor who was in Gaza and trapped in Gaza and had a very difficult situation and was trying to get out. So yesterday, as they started letting people out of Gaza, she was one of the first people to get out. And here's the amazing thing. I heard this on NPR of all places. She was sitting in her hotel room at the Hilton in Cairo, like the opposite of living in Gaza, let me tell you. And what's she doing? She's planning to go back and help some more. She's drawn to actually, through compassion, to actually helping in the situation. She's just escaped from this horror, and she's going to go back. That's what she would like to do. Whether she actually does, who knows? But that's what she wants to do. She wants to go back and help some more. She's a doctor. That's doctor energy in some sense. So it's interesting, you know, you can, but what she had to do is get away. She had to sort of go out and regroup. She's like, hang out in the Hilton in Cairo for a few days and sort of, you know, get some rest, get clean, get some good food, da da da. Then she wants to go back. It's powerful, powerful energy and compassion when it's that clear. So here's another thought about compassion. And that's that sometimes compassion is thought to be weak. It's like, oh, you know, if you're compassionate, people are going to walk all over you. That's what Sharon has to say about that. Sometimes we think that to develop an open heart, to be truly loving and compassionate, means that we need to be passive, to allow others to abuse us, to smile and let anyone do what they want with us. Yet this is not what is meant by compassion. Quite the contrary. Compassion is not at all weak. It is the strength that arises out of seeing the true nature of suffering in the world. Compassion allows us to bear witness to that suffering, whether it is in ourselves or in others, without fear. It allows us to name injustice without hesitation and to act strongly with all the skill at our disposal. To develop this mind state of compassion is to learn, as the Buddha put it, sympathy for all living beings without exception. I want to read something else. This is from Jack Kornfield's book, A Path with Heart. And he's talking about what it means to actually take in what's going on out there in the world. How, you know, there's compassion that arises out of our own suffering. We can be sitting there and get caught in some wild story from our past or whatever that just, it's full of regret and remorse, and we're blaming ourselves and beating ourselves up. And if we're careful and we see it, if we see mindfully seeing what's happening, compassion for ourselves might be the most useful thing to see. Yeah, I'm really suffering right now. That might be a skillful mind state that arises in the midst of a sitting practice or a formal meditative practice of some sort. But then we have to take this out into the world. I think of compassion for me is much more about being out in the world. And that's what he's talking about here. No one says this will be easy. Sitting in meditation is difficult, and acting in meditation is equally difficult. It may take years of practice to learn how to enter the family arena or the political arena and stay connected to our deepest compassion. And this is Thanksgiving's coming up, so that's why this is might be useful for some people. The family arena, right? Staying connected takes a particular unconscious effort. Yet what is sacred and what is true is found here as much as anywhere. We may be confused initially because our world is complex. When we sit alone, we face only our own suffering. When we act in our families or in the world community, we must also face the suffering that connects us all with all of life. Hundreds of millions of our brothers and sisters live in situations of great injustice or great poverty. At times, the injustice and the sorrow of it all seems overwhelming, beyond our capacity to face. Yet something in us knows that this too is part of our spiritual life, and that we can respond to this suffering as a part of our own, which in fact it is. None of us can avoid tyranny, loss, sorrow, or death. We are all interconnected in the destruction or saving of our planetary environment. We must remember that the world's current problems are fundamentally a spiritual crisis. Incredibly wise words. We must remember that the world's current problems are fundamentally a spiritual crisis created by the limited vision of human beings, a loss of a sense of connection to one another, a loss of community, and most deeply a loss of connection to our spiritual values. Political and economic change have never been sufficient in themselves to alleviate suffering when the underlying causes are not also addressed. The worst problems on this earth, warfare, poverty, ecological destruction, and so forth, are created from greed, hatred, prejudice, delusion, and fear in the human mind. To expand the circle of our practice and to face the sorrow in the world around us, we must face these forces in ourselves. Einstein called us nuclear giants and ethical infants. Only when we have found a compassion, a goodness, and understanding that transcends our own greed, hatred, and delusion, can we bring freedom alive in the world around us. So what's the most difficult? Here we are with let's take one take. What's the most difficult thing about having compassion for others in the world? How can we have compassion for everyone? Especially, how can we have compassion for people who are acting as perpetrators of suffering in the world, who literally are causing untold, unimaginable suffering in the world? How can we have compassion for them? And the only way I can think of doing that, the only way that works for me, is the understanding that we're all human beings. We're all capable of doing horrible things. Even if we don't act out of these things, we experience the terrible mental suffering of the one who does, tossed about by lust and anger and fear. We all suffer, just as these people are suffering, driven to act the way they do by their suffering. This is what we have to remember. This is the hardest thing to remember. That this is what's actually true. Everyone who's acting in insanely cruel ways are just totally lost in suffering themselves. And can we have compassion for them and at the same time want to take action to make that not happen again? That's the difficult road that the Buddha points to, that somehow we can do both of those things. If we are like metta, there's a formal compassion practice that is kind of an interesting thing to look at. And this is the one I talked about when I said I spent 10 days practicing this. And like metta, it has a phrase, but now it's not a whole set of phrases. It's just one really simple phrase. May you be free from suffering. That's it. That's the wish we have for all beings. May you be free from suffering. And at the same time, acknowledging, as I was saying earlier, that physical suffering in particular, and also some emotional suffering, is inevitable. So it's like, may we be free from suffering. It's almost saying, can we at least not create more suffering? can we, as we're suffering, not make it worse for everyone else around us? And also, at some level, can we truly be free from suffering? Is basically, I mean, if you actually consciously wish that for another being, what you're really saying is, can you become enlightened? Because that's what, to be free, literally free from suffering, that's what it means. When the Buddha was first enlightened and he was walking to go meet his five buddies in the forest, someone along the road encountered him, and they said they knew there was something really special going on here. They could feel his energy, and they said, "Who are you?" And he just answered, "I'm the one who no longer suffers. I'm the one who no longer suffers." So when you literally say, "May you be free from suffering," you're saying, "Can you not no longer suffer? Can you be moving towards enlightenment instead?" It's a very powerful wish. It's a difficult practice to hang out with, to actually sort of have people. If you want to sort of play with this a little bit, think of someone you know who right now might be, a friend who's in hospital or is going through a difficult time in their life with their job or their family or who knows, like all those things that people go through. Think of that person, hold them really clearly in your mind and heart. See them in your mind and repeat this phrase for 15 minutes and see how that connects you to this person. It's a really powerful way to feel connection just by repeating the phrase, "May you be free from suffering." Or perhaps you're going through a really difficult time right now. Maybe you need compassion for yourself. Then you just change the phrase to be, "May I be free from suffering." Perfectly great practice. May I be free from suffering. Could be a very skillful, useful thing to do, to actually have that wish for yourself. Want to finish, as I always do, with a little bit of poetry. This is from Mary Oliver's book, Why I Wake Early. It's called Breakage. I go down to the edge of the sea. How everything shines in the morning light. The cusp of the whelk, the broken cupboard of the clam, the opened blue mussels, moon snails, pale pink and barnacle scarred, and nothing at all whole or shut, but tattered, split, dropped by the gulls upon the gray rocks, and all the moisture gone. It's like a schoolhouse of little words, thousands of words. First, you figure out what each one means by itself, the jingle, the periwinkle, the scallop, full of moonlight. Then you begin slowly to read the whole story. I think that's a pretty good description of practice. There's all these little bits, and then we start to read the whole story. That's the ambition we all have, the plan we all have, the direction we want to go anyway.